Hello and welcome to the programme. You can visit the website anytime you like, rte.ie/Mooney. Well, a very special edition of Mooney Goes Wild tonight. Last August, Galway hosted the International Basking Shark Conference. With sightings of these gentle giants increasing along our coasts, interest in their behaviour and conservation has never been higher. Our reporter Terry Flanagan was there, speaking to scientists, conservationists and the people working to protect one of the ocean's most mysterious creatures.
The waters off Ireland's western seaboard are teeming with life. Beneath the surface, a hidden world thrives. From drifting plankton to darting fish. From silent jellyfish to the songs of the humpback whale. But among these creatures, one stands apart. It is a fish, or so we call it. But when it rises from the deep, vast and silent, gliding just beneath the surface, it feels more like a whisper from another time. Ancient, unhurried, and utterly unforgettable. A leviathan cloaked in mystery. Reaching lengths of up to 10 metres and weighing as much as 4,500 kilograms, it is the second largest fish on Earth. With its huge mouth agape, it cruises through the water, filtering thousands of litres every hour, harvesting plankton. This is the basking shark, a gentle giant most commonly seen from May to September along Ireland's wild Atlantic Way. Each year, as spring turns to summer, something remarkable happens. The ocean warms, plankton blooms, and the giants return. Drawn by the abundance of food, basking sharks migrate northward, appearing in our coastal waters during the summer months. These seasonal visitors follow the plankton-rich currents, often coming astonishingly close to land, sometimes just metres from the shore. For coastal communities, their arrival is more than a spectacle. It's a moment of connection between people and nature, science and story. Marine biologists track their movements, hoping to unlock the secrets of their migration.
So what's being recognised now internationally is Ireland is a global hotspot for basking sharks. And we hear stories from all around the world of declines in sightings of basking sharks. But in Ireland, we seem to have more and more. And it's brilliant to bring together all these world authorities on such an iconic species to share their stories. But more importantly, to come to Ireland to reinforce that idea that we are front and centre of basking shark research now.
Dr. Simon Barrow is a co-founding member of the Irish Basking Shark Group. In August 2025, in association with the National Parks and Wildlife Service, they organised an international conference on basking sharks at the Atlantic Technological University in Galway.
So the conference this weekend has brought together basking shark researchers and enthusiasts from actually all over the world. We've some presentations on the line, we have many people in the room. We've even got a guy from Japan who's come over, has never seen a basking shark. He's a geneticist. And we've got people from America, Southern America, North America, all over Europe, colleagues in Norway, colleagues from the UK. So we haven't met in person since 2009, was the last time we had a basking shark conference in the Isle of Man, which was a hotspot in those days, is now no longer. So it's so appropriate that here we are now in the new global hotspot, the west coast of Ireland, and we've got a lot of the old faces that have come back, great to see, and lots of young people. And I suppose that's where the future is by sharing, empowering and enthusing young people to get mad about sharks, basking sharks, to catch what I call shark fever.
Why do you think Ireland has become a hotspot?
We don't know why Ireland's become a hotspot, but all the evidence shows it has. There's a fantastic graph shown this morning where the decline in sightings off the south coast of England and the concurrent increase on the west coast of Ireland. So they've moved, probably moved because of changes in water temperature, changes in their prey, zooplankton. So it's a lot to do with climate change and that kind of stuff. But there seems to be something more profound there as well. You know, are the numbers increasing? We're not too sure. So that's a question that's kind of, I suppose, underlying the conference is, OK, Ireland's a global hotspot. Why are they here? And what can we do to protect them and make sure that they're safe when they're in Irish waters?
Do you think the numbers are increasing, or is it just we're seeing them more often?
You know, they were killed in quite large numbers. I mean, there's some estimates of over 100,000 just in the kind of European waters over the last sort of 100 years, and they're probably underreporting. So there's no doubt, as a long-lived, slowly reproducing species, you would expect a population recovery. But to actually measure that scientifically, it's very hard to know because we don't know how many are there. It's very hard to estimate abundance. So there probably is a recovery, but there's also a huge increase in interest in basking sharks. You know, we talk about them a lot, we talk about them on the radio, we see amazing images on social media. So I think that's really helped increase the number of sightings coming in, and sometimes it's hard to tease that apart. But if they're not there, you can't see them. And there's plenty of people elsewhere that are putting a lot of effort in and literally are not seeing them. We had a talk this morning from New Zealand. They practically don't see them in New Zealand. They got some money to do dedicated basking shark surveys about 5 or 10 years ago, and they didn't see a single shark. They're gone. Where have they gone? Some of them might come to Ireland and some of them are sort of elsewhere. So those are the kind of simple questions that we ask and are very hard to answer. But I think without that certainty, we do know that Ireland is so important, and it's important that we protect them.
And we do talk a lot about them on the radio. The Mooney Goes Wild programme has been following the fortunes of basking sharks in Irish waters for many years now. Back in 2013, Éineann Ilona and I spent a day at sea with Emmett Johnston and other members of the Irish Basking Shark Group as they tracked and tagged basking sharks off Innistruthul, Ireland's most northerly island.
So remember, try and keep count, guys, of how many we've seen. So there's one just back here, there was one down there, and there's at least two over there. So that's four, there's another one there. That's five, yeah? Another one behind, okay, so that's six. So when we put our tags on, if we get a picture of that, Cormac? Picture the tag. When we get our tags on, then we can start getting a better count because we'll get an idea of how many there is when we start seeing ones that have tags or don't have tags. Tag deployed. So we're going to mark our waypoint, yeah. That's our first shark tag.
Watching Emmett and the team tagging basking sharks was genuinely awe-inspiring. It's not just about placing a tag. It's the long hours spent searching, the patience and the precision needed to get close without disturbing the animal. When a shark is spotted near the surface, the team moves in. The goal is simple. Attach a small plastic tag to the dorsal fin. These are called Darvik tags, used purely for identification. They don't track the shark or collect data, but they're still incredibly useful. If the same shark is seen again, researchers can recognise it instantly and learn more about its movements and behaviour over time. The dorsal fin is the perfect place for tagging. On a fully grown basking shark, it can reach up to half a metre tall. It's made of cartilage, the same flexible material as your nose or ears. And it has no bones or nerves. That means tagging doesn't cause any pain or harm. The tag is clipped gently onto the top edge of the fin using a long pole. It's quick, clean, and designed to stay on securely without damaging the fin.
So you can see that the tag actually is quite visible under the water. You know, serves, it actually helps you see them move.
Once tagged, the shark continues on its way, undisturbed. Since the first classification of the species in the mid-1700s until very recently, the basking shark has been under siege from hunters, particularly in the northeast Atlantic.
Hunting commenced sometime in the 1700s, we believe, and initially it was in places like Norway, and then the word got round as fishermen travelled and passed the knowledge on about how the sharks were hunted and what they were worth.
Colin Speedy has been a professional yacht skipper for much of his life. His book, A Sea Monster's Tale, focuses on the historical exploitation of basking sharks by humans and of our current fascination with these enigmatic creatures.
In Ireland, that was recognised in the 1700s when Thomas Nesbitt and his family developed a whaling and shark hunting port at Inver in Donegal Bay. And so it was clearly an already well-established hunt, properly mechanised. It wasn't one of the small-scale hunts, which probably also existed along the wild Atlantic seaboard.
And how did that progress then through the next 100 years or so?
Over the next 100 years or so, the shark oil only became more valuable. And what was important was that a small boat team from a small coastal village could row out, harpoon a shark and tow it ashore and sell the livers or render the livers down and sell the oil. And that could make the difference between feast and famine for a small village over a winter. So the values were extraordinary. What basically happened was basking shark oil was recognised as being excellent for lighting because it was very, very clean and burned cleanly. And so it was used, first of all, in small black houses along the coastal shoreline, but then later in cities mixed with rape oil and burned in street lamps. So as it got more valuable, the Irish government made subsidies available to these guys to improve the quality of the oil, amongst other things. And so it developed into a highly valuable industry.
And how long did this last?
This lasted at least until about 1830, when the two things happened. One was there were fewer sharks being seen around the Irish coastline, and the other one was more whale oil was about as well, so that had reduced prices. And finally, paraffin was introduced, a synthetic oil, and that really did make them put the mockers on oil for lighting.
But the numbers at this stage, had they been dropping?
It's very hard to tell, because they're a highly mobile species, and sometimes you get long spells when they'll be in Scotland, and then you'll get long spells when they'll be in Ireland. So it's very difficult to tell. But what we do know is that consistent hunting, especially in the last half of the last century, reduced numbers drastically in the northeast Atlantic right across to the levels they are now, which makes what's happening here in Ireland and all the research that's being done so vital in the future for the shark.
And thankfully, there is no hunting anymore. It's totally illegal.
No, absolutely. Finally, it was outlawed in Ireland in 2022. And God bless the Irish Basking Shark Group for all the hard work they put in over many years to achieve that great result.
So I presume then that will lead to increasing numbers of basking sharks in the future.
Well, certainly it'll stop basking shark numbers being reduced in any form. And we hope that that will allow the basking sharks a sanctuary in time to recover their numbers. But they're very slow to reproduce, they're late maturing, they'll reproduce their way back to the former numbers very slowly.
Basking sharks have been swimming in our oceans for millions of years. As I've mentioned, they're the second largest fish in the world, yet somehow they remain one of the least understood. It's only in recent decades that scientists have begun to study them properly. Before that, most of what we know came from chance sightings and fishermen's stories. We know they're gentle giants, filter feeders that cruise near the surface, scooping up plankton with their huge open mouths. We know they visit Irish waters between May and September. But beyond that, there's still so much we don't know. Where do they go in winter? How far do they travel? How many are there? Do they return to the same places year after year? That's why research, even simple identification tagging, is so important. Every time a basking shark is tagged or resighted, we learn a little more. Piece by piece, we're building a clearer picture of their lives. Dr. Simon Barrow.
The basking shark is an iconic species in Ireland. It's the second largest fish in the world. It's distributed in the northern and southern hemisphere, the Pacific and the Atlantic. But throughout its global range, Ireland is not only now recognised as a global hotspot, but has seriously important historical connections to basking sharks. The Achill Island fishery is the best documented basking shark fishery in the world. And that was in the kind of late 1900s, 50s, 60s. But before that, basking sharks were really important for coastal communities, especially here in Connemara, Clatdop district, where if you caught a basking shark, extracted the oil from its liver and sold that, that could be the difference between having a tough winter or a relatively easy winter. They were so valuable. So even there's a great story that in 1742, the streetlights of Galway City were lit with the oil from basking sharks. We called them sunfish, or in Irish, Livon Corgrania, the great fish of the sun, but they were actually basking sharks.
And the reason why they were called sunfish is because they're so close to the surface.
Yeah, it's only a certain time of the year, and it's only a certain time in their life cycle that they're actually on the surface. And exactly why they're actually so much on the surface, their fins break the surface and we can see them, we're not too sure. Clearly in the spring they're feeding, and then at this time of year in the autumn now, we've been recording these amazing breeding behaviours, this torus of sharks where hundreds of them are swimming around in circles, not feeding. So that ability to come to the surface means that we know they're there, we can see them, record them, but also gains access for scientists and researchers to start tagging them, putting on satellite tags and time depth recorders and all this amazing technology that's available, which many people are sharing here. So they're quite a unique shark species in that they are accessible at certain times of year for working on them scientifically.
You say they're a unique species. They are indeed, because when you think of sharks, you don't think of them as feeding on plankton, number one. They are warm-blooded, whereas most fish are cold-blooded, and they give birth to live young. We don't normally get that with fish.
No, and a few people have said here and said to me recently is, they're not real sharks. And you're thinking, what do you mean? Of course they're real sharks. It's not real sharks because they've not got big teeth and they eat fish and mammals and humans. But they are real sharks and they're quite highly evolved. But they are one of only three species of shark that filter feed zooplankton to feed rather than feed on larger prey. And it's absolutely, their biology in many ways is more akin to a whale or a dolphin, slow reproductive rates. So we as the Irish Red and Dolphin Group often include them as honorary mammals. And it's funny how we hear from other parts of the world that that same misconception that they're not real sharks, they're actually whales, is quite apparent from South America to New Zealand. So it's quite a common reaction from humans when they see a basking shark.
You mentioned the Irish Whale and Dolphin Group, but you're also a co-founder of the Irish Basking Shark Group. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, I actually had tags made for me in 1993, Terry, and it took me 15 years to get my first tag out in 2008 when I tagged a couple off West Kerry. These are just individually coloured numbered tags. And that year I heard about another guy up in the show in Donegal who was interested in sharks and working on them as well, Emmett Johnson. So I went up to Donegal, we started working together, become great friends. And in 2009, Emmett organised a conference in Greencastle in Donegal, a fantastic conference. And that's kind of where we sort of said, right, we need to be a group of people. And that's what we are, a group of people in Ireland interested in basking sharks. There wasn't many of us at the time, there was probably two. And now I can't believe that, 15, 16 years later, we're hosting an international basking shark conference here in Galway. It's fantastic.
Observing basking sharks from boats can be tricky. Their movements are unpredictable and often elusive. That's why sometimes it's best to take to the air. Marine biologist Nick Pfeiffer, is pioneering the use of cutting-edge aerial technology to track and study these creatures. Using drones equipped with high-resolution cameras, Pfeiffer and his team are able to monitor basking shark populations off the West Coast with minimal disturbance, offering new insights into their behaviour.
We're in a unique position here in Ireland now. We're getting large aggregations of basking sharks, really showing two main behaviours on the West Coast. One is feeding behaviour that tends to happen in the early part of the season in April. And then moving into the late summer, we get these courtship aggregations. So the kind of pre-mating aggregations of sharks, particularly along the West Clare coast.
Now, technology has come on in leaps and bounds in the last 20 years or so. You are not just in the water taking photographs and taking video footage, but you also take it from the air with the drones.
Yeah, absolutely. And the sharks often will present themselves on the surface, either feeding or forming what we call toruses, which are kind of patterns of organized circular swimming, clockwise swimming, of only adult sharks. And it's very visible using drones, and that's how they were actually first recorded back in Ireland in 2016. But technology has moved in leaps and bounds, and so everything from underwater cameras and video equipment through to echo sounders, which allow you to detect sharks in the water without actually seeing them. So they leave a sound signal, reflected sound signal. And of course, drones, then aerial drones, allow you to visualize it from the surface.
And all of this can be happening at the same time. You can be in the water, under the water, recording. You can have your drone up in the air recording, and you can also listen to them. So you get a big picture as to what's happening with the sharks.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So the drone imagery allows you to understand that they're there in the first place. And while you might be out in a boat and you have a drone in the air, the opportunity then exists for you to get in and record what's happening underwater. And it's very interesting because the detailed studies, so I've worked closely with people at the University of Southampton, Professor David Sims in particular, and Emily Shortall, and they've analysed a lot of the video footage and are able to detect particular patterns of behaviour amongst adult circling sharks, which would indicate that this is a courtship aggregation. And that all comes about through the application of technologies such as drone technology and underwater filming techniques and technologies that weren't really of sufficiently developed in previous years to allow us to do that kind of work now.
And what have you learned from it?
Lots. There's so much to be learned. I guess the key thing is that this particular circling behaviour of mature sharks that we're seeing on the West Clare coast is actually unique to the west of Ireland. So whereas previously in the past it has been recorded off the east coast of North America, at the moment there is nowhere else in the world where this is known to be happening. So it presents a unique opportunity to research and understand the parameters that control and affect the life cycle and life history of basking sharks. It may not last forever in Irish waters. These events have been happening since about 2016. They, in history, are known to have happened in other areas. Unfortunately, the basking shark population was very depleted after the commercial fishery, and it would appear that these behaviours were no longer being observed because the sharks were just not there in the numbers anymore.
What do you think these behaviours, what's causing them?
Well, I think what's bringing it about, I think it's a natural behaviour. And I think what's happening is these natural behaviours, we're beginning to see them again, because since the basking shark fisheries ended in Ireland in and around 1984, it continued in other areas in the North Atlantic until the early 2000s. But now that it's completely ceased and is protected throughout most of its range in the North Atlantic, I think the population is slowly beginning to recover. So as it recovers and the numbers of sharks increase, we're going to start seeing more of the natural behaviour that we in our generations haven't seen because the sharks were so depleted.
Recently, basking sharks have been observed breaching, leaping out of the water in a display more commonly associated with whales. On Loop Head in County Clare, filmmaker Tony Whelan captures this behaviour in a way that is both dramatic and deeply mysterious.
You got it.
Scientists suggest several possible explanations. Breaching may serve as a form of communication, a way to signal presence or dominance. It could also be linked to courtship, particularly during mating season when sharks gather in coastal waters. Another theory is that breaching helps to remove parasites from the skin. Whatever the reason, witnessing a creature of such immense size launch itself from the sea is a powerful reminder of the energy and complexity of marine life. Dr. Peter Climley.
Many years ago, I was swimming at a seamount and I observed manta rays leaping out of the water and basking and coming down and splashing. And so I became interested in breaching and went out with Emmett Johnston and the basking shark. It's slow moving. It's almost like a cow. But then they descend in the water column. They go along the bottom at 10 meters down, 30 feet down. And then they charge to the surface. They launch themselves out of the water and splash. Now, when they do that, they very often turn on their side. What they're trying to do is dislodge gelatinous material from their gills. So that's one potential function. But they also have a lot of parasites on them, these remoras. And so maybe to dislodge them. So certainly when they come down and hit the water, their muscles move and maybe they dislodge a parasite.
When they land on the water again, I read somewhere that they land mostly on the right-hand side. Is that correct?
Oh, that's interesting, on the right-hand side. Well, they certainly do it on the side. I don't know why they would do it on one side versus the other side. But doing it on the side, then they're very close where they land. Their gills are going to hit the water, and suddenly it's going to shut up.
And have you any other reasons as to why they might breach?
It may have to do with reproduction. It may have to do with warding off potential sharks would be feeding, you know, and they're feeding on something. They don't want other sharks. Or maybe it's also a dinner bell. Toby Curtis in California has argued that they're altruistic, and they do that and they attract other sharks to feed. So there are lots of theories, and what needs to be done is some experiments to test these theories. Now, I have a favorite theory myself.
Which is?
Well, one year, and it's an anecdote, I was off the Baja Peninsula, very close to shore, it's late in the day, and mobulus, these are a small manta ray, were leaping like popcorn, boom, 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 boom. And so we got our snorkels on our masks, and we swam to shore, and there were all of these larval fish, ichthyoplankton is what we call them. And every time we would hear a splash, the plankton, the school kind of became more dense. And I'm not even certain whether some of them may have been incapacitated. So that's what they were doing. And these basking sharks, they seek out what are called internal waves. If you go out on the sea, you'll see a slick, and it's a long slick. And water comes up from underneath, and there's a lot of phytoplankton, plant-eating plankton that feeds, and zooplankton that feed on them. And so they're really high concentrations of plankton. So this is where the basking sharks are feeding. And if they were to leap out of the water, bam, and hit, this might make the plankton more dense. And they're more efficient feeders doing that.
So breaching might be enabling the concentration of plankton in particular areas, allowing the sharks to feed. Or maybe it is a means of parasite removal. Whatever the real reason, there is no shortage of theories.
My research is based on the breaching behaviour of basking sharks in Loop Head.
Fatima Neera is a postgraduate student at the Atlantic Technological University in Galway.
So breaching is basically when an animal, in this case an oceanic animal, has a basking shark, just jump out of the water. It propels the body out of the water and land back.
And why do they do that?
Well, that's the question that everybody asks. So I probably will say that probably depends of the situation, okay, because this type of behavior consumes a lot of energy, so probably there is not just one single reason. But in my research, based, as I say, in Loophead, during the torus behavior, seems to be related mainly probably to communication or socializing behavior has the main reason.
And would that be socializing with other basking sharks?
Yes, probably, because this landing back in the water, it creates a strong sound. So this can be a reason. This can be socializing, cause attention, call attention of other animals or avoid other animals also.
Many people would think that it's to get rid of parasites.
Yes, this is one of the theories. That's why I say that probably there is not just one reason, but several of them that cause this behavior. In this case, in this context, where I studied the breaching, that is, as I say, in Loophead, in these specific days where we have the torus, that is a courtship behavior, it seems that it's not related to the parasites for the simple reason that when we analyze the pictures of the breaches, 95 pictures that we analyzed, in the majority part of them, we didn't see any lamprey, visible lamprey, that is the parasites that we look for, attached to the body. So it seems that it's not that related, maybe.
So you think it might be something to do with reproduction. Would it be a case then that the most of these breaches are by males?
So when we analyze this sex ratio on the pictures, there is a slightly more number of males than females. But I think that we cannot base the conclusions just on this because we just have 95 pictures and some of them we couldn't identify the sex of the animal because of the angle of the body. So I will not go that deep on that, honestly, not yet.
Well, I would have thought that if it was males and they were displaying to the females, like a peacock puts up his mm-hmm. tail feathers to show off, mm-hmm. that maybe it's a case of the males showing off. I can leap the highest, so I'm the strongest male. Mate with me.
Yes. In a lot of animals, in the animal world, this happens, that the male displays some type of behavior to call the attention. But this was one of the theories at the beginning when they start to study the breaching. But later on, they saw that also females do it. It is not just males. So it may be also a female showing interest or not in a male, for example, or simply just calling each other to gather together in the torus. That is like mm-hmm. this courtship behavior. It doesn't need to be just directly related to a male showing their power to be selected as a mate.
The breaching, is it random?
My results say no, because I have a clear pattern that shows these peaks of activity where one shark breach and then you have several breaches following this one, all in the same areas. And then you have a small window of time of calm and then again a peak of activity. So these patterns are repeated during all the days that the data was collected. And we also saw them in data from 2020. So it seems to be repeating through actually years. Let's see what we have this year and if the pattern is still there. But I will say that almost for sure this is not a random behavior.
Do you think then, do all sharks breach or is it just some of them?
Not all of them, but a lot of them, even like another type of elasmobranchs, they breach for a lot of different reasons. So no, definitely not just baskins.
When they breach, they jump up out of the water, they turn on their side and they land back in the water again. I read somewhere that the majority of the landings are on the right-hand side of the animal. Is there any reason for that?
So we didn't analyze in what size actually it lands because it was not actually relevant for what we were looking for. But I cannot tell if actually it will be relevant in general for the animal. I don't think that they are like right-handed riders or left, you know. So I don't think so, but maybe more studies in the future will show a reason for this.
Another rare and captivating behavior of basking sharks emerges when dozens of these gentle giants gather in a slow, swirling formation. Known as the torus, this mysterious circular dance is believed by scientists to be part of an intricate courtship ritual. Layered vertically in the water column, the sharks move in perfect unison. Males and females weaving through the currents, brushing fins, mirroring each other's movements, and occasionally breaching the surface in sudden, powerful bursts.
As a citizen scientist and a biologist actually by trade, my main area with the basking shark project has just been gathering sightings data, so in particular off the West Coast. A lot of it is either counting the animals for the group or getting some drone footage, observing behaviours and that sort of thing.
Biologist Marcus Hogan.
Originally it started from land, just observing the animals from the shore, and then it progressed into moving out in boats with a couple of friends from the Irish Wind and Dolphin Group and the Basking Shark Project. Then that evolved into drone work and even some underwater stuff, occasionally seeing a camera in the water and seeing, observing behaviours and just counting, seeing what's going on.
Tell me a little bit about the drone work that you do.
So with drone work, mainly what that involves in particular is the tourist behaviour that we're seeing, which is courting aggregations happening off the West Coast. So what you do with that is stick up the drone and you just see what way the animals are swimming. Then you can get a gauge for what they're doing. Are they just gathering together or are they actually potentially courting and forming what we call these toruses, these spiral patterns we see?
A torus is this circular movement of slow swimming sharks.
Yes, it's when you see a group of sharks swimming basically nose to tail. You know, this can happen for over a few minutes or a few hours, happening for a long period of time. And what's hypothesised is that it's courting behaviour.
And of course, before drone footage, you really wouldn't have got to see this from land or from a boat.
No, because you see, the thing about sharks is, at the end of the day, they don't breathe air, so they don't have to surface unless they want to. So getting over them gives you a view through the water that you just can't get oftentimes from a boat, especially if you're out in a small boat like a rib or something like that.
And what I found very unusual about it, looking at the footage, is that you're looking down at different layers or different levels in the water, that all of these movements are not at the surface, but it's going down beneath that.
And that's the thing, that's the big mystery. At the end of the day, being fish, they don't need to surface, so God only knows what's going down below all the time. The really, really interesting thing has just been observing what behaviours happen in these courting aggregations. We've seen some more subtle behaviours from some other pals of mine, the likes of head nodding and even some rubbing off each other. And then the breaching activity, of course, which has been going off County Clare for the last while, which has been absolutely fascinating. It's been really cool.
The head nodding, that's really weird, isn't it? I've seen that on film. It's just as if they're nodding like, yes.
Yeah, no, it's theorised that potentially they're picking up on just cues in the water, be they hormones or anything released like that. As sharks, they have highly developed senses, particularly the sense of smell. And they have electroreceptors as well on the tip of their snout, which they can use to sense electrical signals generated by living things.
You see, when we would look at that, we would think that there's one shark nodding to another, but that's not the case.
Well, that's what people are trying to find out. We don't know for sure. It seems to be just a response to maybe cues in the water or even cues from other sharks. But again, we don't really know. That's what we're trying to find out.
And those cues could be chemicals.
They could be chemical indeed. Visual as well, but chemical seems to be the big leaning area at the moment.
Like pheromones, is it?
Yes.
Sexual attractants?
Exactly.
So you think then, or it's thought that maybe they're coming together, they're having a chat together in this torus.
In a way, yeah. I don't know how much chatting they're doing, but they certainly could be picking up on each other's cues. Maybe it's visual chat, or maybe it's just all pheromones.
And what happens when the torus is over, when they disperse?
That's the interesting thing. Basking sharks in Ireland, we kind of see sort of from the spring up until late summer, early autumn, and then they vanish. But again, they're fish, they don't need to surface. So some of these sharks will be staying in our waters all the time. Others seem to be moving long distances. We don't really know. But even once the tourists have died down now recently, we've started to see sharks at depth, which is quite interesting. And that's something, again, you won't pick up on from a boat or a drone.
Now, you're saying seeing them at depth, but it's really hearing them at depth, is it?
Seeing, too, some of the likes of Nick Pfeiffer and stuff like that, filming them at depth, actually diving down and mm-hmm. seeing what's going on. Just stuff we can't witness from the boat. I mean, you can use... You can use equipment as well on boats to analyse what's going on at depth. But
and what about their behaviour then in the wintertime? Is that different to summertime?
You see, a lot of it is quite a mystery. Again, when we see them in Ireland, summertime, they're feeding, they're up at the surface, they're feeding on zooplankton, just feeding on phytoplankton, that's why it's up at the surface. In the winter, again, it's a bit of a mystery. Are they feeding as much as they are, or are they... It's piecing together the puzzle, so to speak.
So there's still an awful lot we don't know.
There's so much we don't know.
And you think with drone footage and the likes that that will help to elucidate it?
Drone footage and also underwater footage as well. There's only so much you can gather from a boat. So we need more angles, really.
As Marcus says, there is so much more we need to learn and understand about basking shark behaviour. While it's a thrill to witness them feeding and breaching near the surface in the summer, this behaviour can also put them at risk, bringing them dangerously close to boats and human activity.
Unfortunately, the characteristic about basking sharks that allows us to see them, they're feeding at the surface, also puts them into the environment where they can interact with humans in different ways, and one of those is in boat strikes.
Taylor Chappell is Associate Professor at Hatfield Marine Science Center in Oregon State University.
Boat strikes are becoming more common as we have more people in the water, more people appreciating that we have basking sharks and other marine life in the water, that the numbers of us on the water are increasing. And so that is a, you know, there's a direct correlation with the number of us in the water and the increase of those boat strikes and boat interactions.
How serious then are these collisions for the sharks?
The collisions can be really detrimental to the animals. You know, sometimes it could be as simple as a scrape or a scare, but other times we see massive wounds on them, big cuts through them. And what we saw in ours is that the animal completely changed its behavior. It had to leave its foraging area and swim offshore. There's a large range of impacts that these types of interactions can have.
Mm-hmm. Do many sharks then die from these collisions?
We don't have a sense of how many animals actually die from these collisions. Unfortunately for us, the sharks sink once they die, and so it's unlikely that we'll see those animals afterwards.
I know then from your talk today, you said that they recover very, very quickly.
Sharks have an uncanny ability to recover from physical injuries. And so part of their mating process, part of their relationships with each other end up in some type of wound, a cut or a scrape. And so they heal really quickly. But that's the physical healing. And so we don't know what the long-term behavioral consequences are. We don't know what that means to their opportunities to mate or to feed and things like that.
So do you think they learn from these collisions?
One of the things we're interested in is if that collision has a long-term effect on that animal. So if it's at the surface feeding in a week from now and it hears a boat come by, does it automatically drop down to the bottom? And so the same way that a loud sound might scare us once, you know, do we habituate to that? Or does every time we hear that sound scare us?
A lot of the time, the boats that the sharks will collide with, they're doing nothing wrong. So really, what can be done about it?
Unfortunately, there's no mitigation currently in place to prevent these interactions from happening. So it's on the individual user to keep an eye out for sharks or slow down. And we really need something like a code of conduct that sets a precedence to say, hey, when there's basking sharks around, slow down. Because we know that there's a direct relationship to boat speed and the number of interactions and the severity of those interactions.
And of course, with basking sharks, they swim at the surface. So they're more likely to be hit.
We see a lot more interactions with species that feed at the surface, like a basking shark or a whale shark, because they're in that same environment that boats are.
Is that the major risk then for basking sharks?
Unfortunately, I think that's only one of the major risks. You know, entanglements with fishing nets, boat strikes, these are all things that are really important to mitigate for a basking shark's sort of continued presence here in Ireland.
Do you think these problems are becoming more prevalent, or is it a case that we're seeing them more? We're out on the water more, so we can see it happening. It could have happened 50 years ago or 100 years ago, but we didn't know it.
I think the increase is a mixture of us being there to observe it, and us being there to observe it means there's more people on the water to interact with them. So I think it's a mixture of both of those things, but bottom line is it's increasing, and we need to do something about that.
What advice would you give then to boat owners when they're out at sea?
The advice that I would give is to say, keep your eyes out. And if you see basking sharks around, or you see evidence that, you know, people are looking for basking sharks, just slow down. Take that opportunity to enjoy the environment around you, and maybe you'll help protect a basking shark that day.
We've learned so much about basking sharks in recent decades, uncovering behaviors once hidden beneath the waves. But with that knowledge comes responsibility. The question now is, what can we do to best serve these magnificent creatures? Nick Pfeiffer.
I suppose really the strongest thing I've learned and the biggest message I would have to get out there is that they're very, very vulnerable. Basking sharks are very vulnerable. there are large periods of their life history that we don't fully understand yet. They disappear for extended periods of time, especially over the winter. But as the population seem to recover and we're seeing more of them, and they're spending a lot of time in our waters feeding on the surface or in this aggregated courtship behaviour, the risks to sharks are very significant, from capture and fishing gear through to vessel strikes. And we need to do something to protect them. And in particular, we need to advance our pending marine protected area legislation in Ireland and be in a position that we can introduce measures to protect them.
So even though they're not being hunted anymore, yeah, there are a lot of dangers out there for them.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. And the sharks, thankfully, through the actions of some of our elected representatives in recent years, particularly, I'd like to mention Minister Noonan at the time, ensured that there was a good response to the lobbying for the sharks to be designated under the Wildlife Act, which they were in 2022. So basking sharks were added to the Wildlife Act, which prevents their deliberate harm or killing and protects their breeding grounds. So that's major progress in itself. However, the risk of actual deliberate killing ended in about the 1980s, really, in our waters when the commercial fishery closed. And there are still significant ongoing incidental captures and killings of basking sharks through vessel strikes and through fishing gear. And really, we've got to do some research and get measures in place in Ireland to try and understand the extent of it and what the implication of it may be in terms of the recovery of basking shark populations. We need to get a handle on that. We just know it happens at the moment, but we don't know to what extent. And with adequate data and research, if we do get a handle on the extent of the problem, then we can look at introducing targeted measures, perhaps in the form of closed areas, closed seasons to fishing, or certain fishing activities where there's a high risk of entanglement or vessel strike.
With all this information, one thing stands out. We need to afford our basking sharks greater protection.
Basking sharks are the second largest fish in the world, and they are a protected species in Irish water. So their presence highlights the richness of our marine ecosystems, but they also face increasing pressures, which is why we need to protect them. It's where fair seas comes into places and includes those species in the maritime area that we want to protect.
Eva Lambert is a member of Fair Seas, an organisation advocating for marine protected areas in Ireland.
Yes, so Fair Seas is a coalition of NGOs in Ireland. Irish Wild and Dolphin Group, Irish Environmental Network, Irish Wildlife Trust, we're all pitching in to Fair Seas to advocate for marine protected areas. So the NGOs bring the science to Fair Seas, and then Fair Seas is bringing this science to the government and the policymakers so that we can define marine protected areas in Ireland.
And how successful have you been?
We're quite successful in putting the word out. We are advocating for MPAs, and we're trying to involve as much people as possible into our campaign.
MPAs, they're marine protected areas.
Marine protected areas, exactly. We actually have a petition where we have more than 80,000 signatures at the moment to try to say to the government that it's an urgent situation and we need those protected areas to be designed now. This is where basking sharks come into place, because it's a protected species, so it needs to be protected, and it's one of the species that is included in this legislation that we want to put in place.
It's very important for basking sharks because they spend so much time close to the surface.
Exactly, especially in Ireland. They come in Ireland to reproduce, so it's a very important area in the ecology of basking sharks. So areas protected means that the species is protected and can reproduce years after years. So it's a very important place and time for them to be in Ireland, which is why it's very urgent to protect them as a species.
Now, Ireland is a hotspot, particularly areas like Galway Bay and the Blasket Islands. What protection do those areas have at the moment?
At the moment, there are only marine parks. They don't have a very strong legislation and protection, which is why we need marine protected areas, because this is where the legislation would put high pressure and high laws into place so that the area is more protected and more managed, meaning less fishing boats, less recreational boat, and less marine traffic and basically less pressure on those species.
And do you see this happening?
Yes, this is what we are fighting for with Fair Seas. But there is an EU legislation where every EU country have signed to have 30% of their marine protected area by 2030. So this is an obligation for them to do this. What we are advocating is for the right places to be designed. There is a bill that is being drafted at the moment as we speak, and we're waiting for it to become public and active before the end of 2025.
The last and only other basking shark conference in Ireland took place back in 2009. Since then, much has changed. Basking sharks are now more frequently seen off our coasts. Interest has surged, not just among scientists, but also citizen scientists and the wider public. Technology has advanced, unlocking new insights into their mysterious lives beneath the waves. Dr. Simon Barrow was there at the beginning, tagging his first shark in 2008 and organising that first conference in Donegal the following year. As the 2025 International Basking Shark Conference draws to a close, he reflects on how far we've come.
Yes, it's been a fantastic success. Us as organisers always worry about engagement and things not going right, but everything's run smoothly. Really great people who are generous in time and spirit. Great mix of people, young and old. So I think it's really cemented, it's really re-engaged those connections. There'll be more collaborations come out of it from a scientific level. It's nice for people, what we call our citizen scientists, who have been, you know, sending records in, to hear about how that work is being used from a scientific perspective and how that will go to support conservation actions and policies. So I think it's definitely achieved that. And it's almost laid down a marker in the sand, Terry, because, you know, Ireland gave basking sharks legal protection in 2022 after a long campaign to get that status. So we've done that now. So what's the future? Where do we go with that now? We've accepted that need protecting. We've accepted that Ireland is globally important for it. There's talk about marine spatial planning, marine protected areas, codes of conduct for boat users, so that we watch them responsibly and respectfully. So we do need our agencies who have that legal responsibility now to step up and carry out some of the actions we talk about. So that's what I would like to see coming from this now. We have the state in the room, the Wildlife Service, the Marine Institute, they're all present, contributing. Fantastic to see them. In fact, the Wildlife Service were our key sponsors. Without their support financially, we couldn't have run the conference. So yeah, no, we'll reflect on it. And then I think the next step is to actually implement proper actions, proper policies to do what we've been talking about for too long now.
And what's the one point that you'll take away from today more than anything else?
Oh, that's a difficult question. I think it's reinforced my idea that Ireland is really important. There's some people in other countries that want to work on basking sharks but can't access them. So they're welcome here. We should bring them into Ireland. We should support them, encourage them. And that data will go to support our marine management and conservation in the future. So I think hopefully we've got more connections there, and we've definitely flagged Ireland as, we're here, we have the sharks, please come and work on them and share your knowledge, and let's protect them together. So I think that will probably be the greatest success of the conference.
So the future for basking sharks in Irish waters is good.
It is, and you know what? It's one of the most positive marine stories, really, the last sort of 5 or 10 years, obviously culminating in legal protection. But that engagement with people, and one person said today, Nick Pfeiffer, who's been making amazing pictures off the West Coast in recent years, is that they are ambassadors of the marine. They are very engaging species, and hopefully our awareness of basking sharks in Ireland will help people reconnect with the sea and start caring for what we have here, because we're very privileged in Ireland, and we need to just kind of show that and respect it.
Dr. Simon Barrow ending that special programme presented by Terry Flanagan about the International Basking Shark Conference, which took place last August in Galway. That's pretty much all we have time for. Visit the website anytime you like, rte.ie/Mooney. Until next time, goodbye, goodbye, goodbye.